listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam. I'm telling you.
Welcome back to another episode of the Over the Monster Podcast. This is episode number 10. They didn't think we were going to do it, but we got to double digits. I don't know who they are, but I know they're out there.
All those doubters, man.
Doubters. I thought you said daughters. I was like, Jesus, Jake, what are we doing? All right, let's get back on track. That was Jake that you heard, that I misheard. This is me, Matt Collins. We are back. We are starting off horribly. It can only go up from here. Jake, how are you when you are not insulting everybody's daughters?
I'm okay. I'm tired. I'm ready for the baseball season to come to a close.
Regular season.
Yeah, the regular season. I always love me some postseason baseball, but I'm ready to close the book on this weird one.
Yeah, I'm pretty psyched that it's getting cold out. I'm currently wearing flannel pajama pants, which is always a good time. First time I've put these on all year. Feels good.
There's nothing better than fall clothes.
This is true. This is very true. But there are still some Red Sox stuff to talk about. A little bit of news to get to. I think the biggest piece of news since the last time we talked was the Red Sox found out, or we found out, who the Red Sox are getting back from the Rockies for Kevin Pillar. They got Jacob Wallace. He is a right-handed reliever. Got drafted out of UConn in 2019. He is from Methuen, which is right next to Haverhill, which is right where I grew up. So some Merrimack Valley love there. He was kind of seen as 2019's Durbin Feltman, in that he was a pure reliever with big fastball slider combo that people generally thought was going to move very quickly through the system. He looked good in short season ball in his pro debut. Obviously didn't get a chance to pitch this year, so we don't know. We don't really have the same data that we had on Feltman when Feltman kind of flamed out a little bit in Double-A in his first full season. But one interesting thing about Wallace is that he's been developing a changeup since he got drafted. So he was just a fastball slider guy, been developing a changeup, which kind of leads people to think that they might make him into a starter. Do you think that's the road they're going to go?
Well, I don't know. I think they'll try it, because why not? At his age, I mean, he's only 21, and, you know, like you said, recent draftee in 2019. Reading the scouting report from Fangraphs says Wallace has a starter's mix, a mid-90s heat, and talks about some of his offerings, but then it says that, you know, likely his arm action has him projected in relief. So, I mean, I think it's likely he ends up in relief, but I think they should, and it would behoove them to try him as a starter for, you know, as long as you think that there's a possibility, because there's just no starters in this system. Not a lot.
I'm interested that they say he has a starter's mix.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know that I agree with that. From what I understand, the changeup, I'm looking at his Fangraphs page right now. They have his changeup as a 50, feature 55. They have that as his best pitch. That doesn't seem accurate to me. I mean, I'm not going to pretend I know more than Eric Longenhagen, who I think is the best national prospect guy out there, but from what I understand, he's a fastball slider guy. So unless I'm totally crossing wires here, I'm all for keeping him as a reliever and just shooting him through the system. The guy like this, especially with this arm action, he throws strange. I want to get him up as quickly as possible. And the stuff, I mean, I only go off video, and most of it that I've seen is from college, so it's not super telling. But I love me a relief prospect. It is a strange thing to love, but I love a guy that could just shoot through the minors. And I mean, you saw it with Garrett Crochet, who is a starter prospect, but the White Sox have him relieving right now. I just kind of love that profile. I would like to see him shoot through and do what Felton couldn't.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, to each his own there. I think if the team were closer to contending right now, the Red Sox, if they were closer to contending, I'd be more all about that because I'm all for cheap bullpen construction. But, you know, while the Red Sox are still trying to figure out where they actually are as an organization this year and next probably, you know, I have no issues with seeing how good that changeup can actually be. The report from 2019 had as a 45 current grade, 50 future grade. So if that ticked up a half grade, you know, that is very interesting. And, you know, why not, while you're in this transitional period, let them do it. But, you know, I definitely understand just getting a guy who can contribute in the bullpen up right away, because the bullpen arms we have watched this year have been, for the most part, garbage. And the ones we gave to the Phillies are even worse. So,
oh, man, how about that?
Oh, that trade looks brilliant. Heath Hembree, right now.
I thought we saw bad Heath Hembree. What Heath Hembree has been doing with the Phillies, I think they just shut him down for the year, didn't they?
Yeah, he's on the IL right now.
Yeah, man, that is brutal.
I mean, Workman has one of the highest hard hit rates in the entire league.
I don't understand what happened there. Poor Phillies fans.
It's like 50%. It's absurd.
That's crazy. I don't understand that, but yeah. Speaking of the bad relievers, I don't think either of us have anything to say about this. But Robert Stuck was optioned today. I have a feeling this will be the last we see of Robert Stuck in a Red Sox uniform.
Happy trails.
Yeah, he was optioned to make room for Nick Pivetta. We are recording this before Tuesday's game, so we have no idea what Nick Pivetta looked like. I'm not gonna guess. That's just setting me up to look stupid. But yeah, Nick Pivetta is starting today. When you're listening to this, you know how he did, but we don't know how he did, so that's why we're not talking about Nick Pivetta. Another bit of news that came out on Tuesday from Jeff Passan of ESPN. He's reporting that most likely the 2021 draft order is going to be based solely on the 2020 record. There had been some speculation for a little while that they were going to either use some sort of lottery system or some sort of combination of 2019 and 2020 to determine the draft order because of the weird shortened season. But Passan is reporting it's probably going to be based solely on 2020. Baseball America had reported the same a couple of weeks ago. This is obviously good news for the Red Sox, but they've actually been playing a little bit better lately. And they are now out of the top two. Seems like that's where you would want to be with the two Vanderbilt guys, Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter. His first name's Jack, right?
Yep.
Jack Leiter. Those are the two top prospects right now. Right now, the Red Sox are in the third spot. They are tied in record with Arizona. Everything I've seen says that they have the tiebreaker. I have no idea what the tiebreaker is, to be honest with you.
It seems like
they have it. What is it?
The tiebreaker is 2020 record.
2019 record?
2019 record, yes. Yeah, so Arizona was one game better than the Red Sox in 2019.
That's wild.
Yeah.
But obviously, this is still weeks ago. So, yeah, right now they're tied with Arizona. They're a couple games up or down, depending on how you look on it. Want to look at it on Kansas City. Angels are right there. It seems like the Red Sox are at least going to be like top five, top six. Right now they are a game. Away from Texas, who's in the two spot. I think all of this hand-wringing about being in the top two is a little overdone. It just seems like something weird. Like, somebody's going to pop up. If they're in the top three, I don't really think it's going to be that big a deal.
No, I don't. Honestly, even if they fall to, like, five,
yeah, I mean,
I'm not worried at all, because there are really, really ridiculously good players at the top of this draft. I've already been reading a bunch of draft preview stuff, and it wouldn't actually shock me if one of the position guys goes ahead of either of those two pitchers that we were talking about, and the Red Sox end up with one of those arms anyways.
For
I mean, the draft is wonky. We've seen people do crazy stuff trying to go under slot deals to their first guys so they can have, you know, better picks in the later rounds. And being that the draft is likely to be 20 rounds next year, we could see, you know, even more playing with money at the top. And also, Texas is just an idiotic organization, so who knows what the hell they're going to do.
Wow. Shots fired at the Texas Rangers. I don't really have any counter to that. One interesting thing, the prospect guys at Baseball Prospectus have been talking about this a little bit lately, more with regard to the Mets, but I think it's something interesting to consider for the Red Sox. I don't think it would ever actually happen, but they've been talking about this for a few years, where a team at some point needs to just blow through the spending limit and just go buck wild and get a bunch of top prospects and basically forfeit the draft the next year. And this year is a particularly compelling year to do that because players are going to have more leverage than ever because of the extra year of eligibility given out by the NCAA. So there's going to be more draft-eligible sophomores. There's just going to be more talent there that you might be able to squeeze out of later picks. Like I said, I don't think anybody would do it, but I think it's a very interesting strategy for a team like the Red Sox, where you could be like, even if you fell to like number six, tell Kumar Rocker, yeah, we're gonna give you like a ridiculous signing bonus, and then get like a bunch of other guys in like the 10 to 30 range with your next like five picks or whatever. It's weird that nobody would do that. Plus with the CBA coming up, these rules are going to be changing. This loophole might go away. This might be the last time to use it. The penalties might change. So, like I said, I don't think anybody's going to do it, but it's something I'm very interested in.
Yeah, I'm fully in support of anything that gives more money to top prospects, especially ones that could potentially come to the Red Sox. So, yeah.
Kumar Rocker was on the Suspicious Barbecue Guys podcast. I listened to that interview. He seems like a very, very cool guy and very good head on his shoulders. So I would not be upset if the Red Sox ended up with him. But obviously, long way to go. And college baseball is going to be weird next year. I don't even feel good about bringing this up, but injuries are going to be something to watch. These guys not really being able to play for a year. So I get the appeal of rooting for draft position right now because there's nothing else to root for with this Red Sox team, but I really wouldn't get too hung up on it.
Yeah, and this is all part of Major League Baseball's strategy to basically have college baseball replace all the leagues that could potentially be disappearing, all of those short season ball leagues.
Which is not going to work, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what will end up happening is junior colleges will benefit tremendously from this, and they're already going to have stacked teams next year. But you know, it's interesting, and I do think college baseball will see some benefit of it. And I also think that it's a really cool idea, and it made sense to do the draft right after the College World Series, and to do it in Omaha seems pretty cool to kind of tie those together.
It's also during the All-Star break now, which is probably a better idea. I still don't think that MLB draft is ever going to be an event, but I do think it is a good idea.
Well, it is idiotic to have your draft like
during the College World Series. Yeah, it makes no sense.
It's just stupid. Like where they've had it, no other league doesn't draw attention to their draft. Everybody else has it in the off season. For them to have it when they have it is just like it's weird. You're making it a non-event.
There is a reason. I forget the reason. I've heard the reason, and it was compelling enough that I didn't, like, walk away from it when I heard it. I forget what it was, but there is a reason for it being in the season. But I don't ever see college baseball being popular enough where people are going to care about the MLB draft.
Not around here.
I don't think anywhere. I could be wrong.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I'm New England biased, so.
Yeah, I mean, all we have is BC and UConn, so.
Any mask, oh yeah.
Oh jeez. All right. congrats on Kale McCarr, by the way.
Yeah, see, there you go. And their football season is inexplicably starting back up, which literally nobody wants, but yeah, UMass is playing football this fall for some reason. I know everybody wants to hear about UMass football. We're gonna move on. the Red Sox also announced today that they're going to have a 60-man group of prospects going down to Fort Myers in October for some instructionals. I haven't heard whether or not they're definitely going to be playing other teams. That's something teams have generally gone away from the last few years in instructionals, is playing against other teams. But Arizona's doing like a big kind of league with all their teams. I think it's a little easier there because Arizona spring training is so condensed. Everybody's so close to each other. It's a little more sprawled out in Florida. But I would assume the Red Sox are probably going to be setting up some games with some other teams, definitely like the Twins because they're in Fort Myers, and some other local teams. But no official word on that. But there are going to be some, there's going to be some prospect stuff going on, which is nice because other than the few guys that have been on the player pool, we haven't really gotten to hear much about progress made by some of the prospects who haven't been in Pawtucket. So are there any names in particular that you're excited to maybe hear some updates about? I don't know how much we would actually hear, but just potential.
Yeah, I think a lot of the guys that I followed at Lowell last year are really the ones that I've been most curious about, like Gilberto Jimenez and Chris Murphy and Ryan Zephyrjohn and, you know, a lot of those types of guys. Lowell was such an interesting level. I'm probably forgetting some names off the top of my head. Who was that other younger pitcher? It's like 18 years old. Threw incredibly well at Lowell last year. Blanking on his name right now. But, I'm really interested to see how they kept
the
in shape.
The dash name?
Yeah.
Patron
Artiles. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Yusnail Patron Artiles. That's it. I'm just curious to see how they kept in shape. And, you know, what they look like. And also, the other guy I've been wanting to see for a while, who I've never seen, is Eduardo Lopez, who's the J2 pick from, like, a couple years ago.
Yeah, Eduardo Lopez is going to be an interesting one. I'm interested, definitely interested to see if he goes. I guess he probably would. 60 guys, maybe there's, well, I'm looking at projected rosters on Sox Prospects. It's the first time I've seen the Worcester logo. That totally threw me off. I guess Eduardo Lopez will probably be there. I'm interested in Jimenez. I'm interested to hear the progress he has made, potentially with switch hitting, how he's looking there. I'm interested in Nick York. Nick York has been in Pawtucket, and he has been raking for a couple days off Red Sox pitching, so my Nick York radar is pretty high right now. Interested in Thad Ward. I still think it's strange that he never got added to the player pool. I know that there's limited resources. I'm not really reading into that really at all, but he was a guy that I was super high on before the world shut down, so I think those are probably the main guys that I'm interested in off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm really interested in seeing more Nick York, too. The at-bats that I got to see online looked pretty interesting. So
yeah, especially against, I mean, this isn't real baseball, let's be clear, but I mean, these are legitimate pitchers. Even guys that we see that come up to the majors and suck, they're a billion times better than anybody Nick York has ever seen.
Yeah, and it'll also be interesting to see more of Jake Groom, too. He's somebody who Keith Law, a couple days ago, still is just dead sure is going to be a starter, which nobody around here is sure of that, but I think there's plenty of people still in love with the stuff there that remains intriguing.
I'm as high on Jay Groom right now as I have been in probably 3 years.
Wow. Wow. What makes you so high right now on him?
Everything that's come out on him has just been so positive. The stuff just seems like it's totally there. And my only concern with him really is injury. And I definitely not going to sweep that concern under the rug because it's been very real in his career, but also it's not something I can predict, so it's not something I'm going to hold against him very much. But the stuff, I don't really see him as being a reliever. I think he's either gonna get hurt too much to pitch at all, or he's gonna be a starter.
Yeah, I think that's where he's most worthwhile for sure, so I fully support that. And I think that we're going to see him maybe as soon as next year, because he has to be added to Rule 5. So, I mean,
yeah,
this is going to be a big off season.
Yeah, I think he's definitely going to be added. He doesn't have to get, I mean, guys get added and not called up that year fairly frequently. So I'm super interested to see what they do with him next year. But we have all winter to talk about that. And then the other thing I want to mention, you brought this up before we started recording, Chris Hatfield, our friend over at Sox Prospects, made this little comparison between Bobby Dalbec's first 17 games and Michael Chavis's first 17. So Dalbec slash 262, 328, 639. Chavis 293, 423, 638. Dalbec has 7 homers. Chavis had 6. Dalbec had 5 walks, 32 strikeouts. Chavis had 12 walks, 19 strikeouts. Their plate appearances were only 4 apart. So, yeah, I mean, that's just an interesting comparison. And not to tell people not to get excited about one of the few exciting things to happen this season, but just something to consider. A, if you're super high on Bobby Dalbec, maybe you need to calm down. But also, I think the flip side of that is if you're low on Michael Chavis, maybe remember how good he was. And, I mean, if you're that excited about Bobby Dalbec, maybe you should be a little more excited about Michael Chavis, because we've seen that he could be even better than Dalbec has been right now.
Or you could take the cup half empty look.
Well, I said that first.
Not excited by both.
Well, I said that first, but I said that, but I don't want to tell people to not be excited about the one exciting thing that happened this season. So
I know. I'm just.
No, that's definitely the more reasonable stance to take for sure.
I'm very worried about the amount of strikeouts. Like, I'm all for some three true outcomes baseball, but you know, sometimes it just gets ridiculous.
Yeah, I obviously he cannot. He's striking out like, I don't know. I don't have his exact rate in front of me. It was last time I looked, it was like 46% or something like that. Obviously, that can't happen. But if he can get it down to like 32, I think he can be workable. And it's been 71 plate appearances. The thing I will say about the difference between him and Chavis, and I've always been one of the higher guys on Chavis, but Dalbec doesn't. I've been looking for a clear hole in his swing. I think he has a little bit of trouble with stuff in on his hands, but I don't see anything as glaring as Chavis with the fastballs, high fastballs.
Completely agree. That has been something that I've been saying for a while about Dalbec, is like, I think his flaws are more fixable. The whole thing his version of Chavis's thing is flailing at outside breakers, specifically like sliders outside the zone. Remember when Xander was dealing with slideritis?
Bogarts and Jackie Bradley goes through that every year, and then he seems to break himself out of it.
Yeah, so if he can rein that in a little bit, I think he has better coverage than Chavis does.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that Dalbec is a safer profile than Chavis. I think they're closer than other people think, but I've always been high on Chavis to the point of, at this point, I might just be being stubborn about it.
Is he your hitter version of Matt Barnes?
No, because Matt Barnes is good. But he has been good. He's not good right now.
3 blown saves since he took over as closer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not defending anything with Matt Barnes in 2020. I don't really have any good things to say about him this year. So we're going to go into a buy or sell portion of the program, which I believe is from Around the Horn, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so I have points on Around the Horn. Do you know that?
I do know that about you.
Tony Reale called my name and gave me points.
So that's amazing.
I have 2 points on Around the Horn that I'm banking for the rest of my life. So yeah, this is my little claim to fame. But yeah, so we're going to do, I have a few scenarios that I'm going to throw out to Jake. He's going to pick one, and then I am going to tell him why he's wrong. Whether I believe it or not, I'm going to try and make the case for the other side of each of these scenarios. So we'll get started with a pitching one. Either Tanner Houck or Nick Pivetta is in the opening day rotation 2021.
Tanner Houck is in the opening day rotation for 2021 because we both have eyes and we've seen him pitch. And if you are listening to this, Nick Pivetta will already have been lifted in the second inning and have given up 5 runs.
So you did what I didn't want to do. you're opening yourself up to something very dangerous.
Oh, no.
All right. So the answer. So you said yes. So I gotta go no. I think the case is pretty obvious that they just fill. So they need to fill two spots if Eduardo Rodriguez is going to be healthy to start the year. Obviously, that's a big if. Ron Renneke expressed a little bit of optimism today. I don't really know how anybody can say anything with any real confidence with Rodriguez. But the case against Hauk or Pivetta being in the rotation would be that they have Rodriguez, Evaldi, Perez, and they trade for somebody, they sign for somebody, some combination of that to fill two spots, and everybody stays healthy through spring training, and even if they don't, they want to keep Hauk down to keep working on that splitter, because for as good as Hauk has been, he still is not throwing the splitter. He's thrown nine of them. I still can only really remember one that was any good. So this one I'm not positive, I believe, but I think I would put it at, if everybody is healthy, if there's no injuries before opening day for spring training, which obviously is a big if, I don't think that either of them would be penciled into a top five spot.
Yeah, I can totally see that with Pivetta, because I think they want to see
what Pivetta, I'm not even considering.
Yeah. I don't know. When we did our lineups last time we were on this podcast, I had Pivetta in my
top five. You did, and I think I groaned.
Yeah, I mean, hate it a lot. I hate everything about it. But, like, I could totally see Hauk being down working on stuff. I don't think it's the right move, but I could see it.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see it, too. And like I said, I'm making my case whether I believe it or not. But I feel like Pivetta is going to just biff it in these two starts. And so if that's what happens, then I can't imagine. But also, I can't imagine they're really going to make any decisions based on these two outings anyways. I think I'm mainly just hoping that he's a reliever next year. And they tell, you don't like it, then like, what do you, like, what else, what's your other option here? But
is it going to be a reliever that throws only breaking balls?
I think his fastball can work. He's just going to use it correctly.
He's it has been throw. So bad, though.
I know, but he tries to throw it low in the zone, and it's like, dude, what are you doing? Yeah. He throws that up consistently, which is not, I mean, that's not as easy as it sounds, but if he can do so, that fastball with the curveball can work. But listen, I'm not going to sit here and say that I think Nick Pivetta is any good.
No, I do think that you have a good point, though, about the throwing up in the zone being much more easier said than done, because I was reading an article about a pitcher. I think it was a Baseball America article, and the pitcher was talking about, you know, how his idea of up in the zone was like up at like the nipples on a hitter, you know, like high.
I think that's the first time anybody's ever said nipples on this podcast.
I think it is. But you know, that's not a competitive pitch is what he was saying. But people's idea of what is high in the zone versus, you know, what's high in the zone but still a competitive pitch are two different things. And I just don't think that it's that easy to train yourself to be comfortable throwing something that you think might be up in the zone and about to get cleaned out.
Yeah, well, that's the other part. If you miss vertically, you're probably going to miss a few inches down more often than you're going to miss a few inches up. And when you're trying to throw at the top of the zone or above the zone and you miss a few inches down, that pitch is going to hit 500 feet.
Yeah.
And so there's a big mental hurdle to get over and have that confidence to be able to throw in that area.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those swings where it looks like you have to, you know, rewind your broadcast to see if the guy even connected, because it just, like, it's all just one motion.
You know, unless it's Michael Chavis. Then you can just throw it over. All right, number two. J.D. Martinez, A, qualifies for the batting title, and B, has a WRC plus over 115.
I will take... I'll go yes, qualifies for the batting title, and no, WRC plus under 115.
Wow.
Because so when we ended the year last year, I remember being on and wrapping up the season with you on a podcast, and we were talking about JD Martinez's struggles against righties. And then when we had the roundtable last week, I was looking into his struggles against righties this year, and they've become even more pronounced. And it's not just that. He struggled tremendously against the fastball this year. So I'm much more concerned because this righty trend has been 2 years in a row. And if he can't hit the fastball effectively, which is the thing that he was best at when he had his best years, that's going to be... I just don't know where we go from there. You know, that's a tremendously flawed player at that point.
Okay, so with the fastball, he has been, based on... I don't know the numbers in front of me, but I was looking this up and I wrote an article about him last week. He has been... By the expected metrics on Baseball Savant, he's been pretty significantly unlucky against fastballs compared to the quality of contact. So I think the case for Martinez, for this being a throwaway season for Martinez, is A, the video, which it drives me nuts that this would be so important for him, but there's a very good chance it is that important for him. B, this season... And the weirdness going on in the world, I think, can affect anybody, and I think that could be affecting him. And also, the team being so bad, I think sometimes it could be tough to play on a team so bad, especially for a guy like JD Martinez, who came here specifically to win. And, I mean, that's the appeal of signing such a big contract in Boston, than having to go through this kind of season with no fans in the crowd. And especially for a DH, I feel like a DH might get affected by that more than anybody else, because they have so... few opportunities to do anything in a game. You might need that extra oomph to get psyched up. I'm actually surprised that the part that you took was the playing time. So I think that's the biggest concern of me, just because he's getting old.
Yeah.
But I can see him bouncing back. I mean, before the season, he hadn't been below 136. Since 2013, 115. I almost made that 125 too.
Yeah, I wouldn't have blamed you if you did. I either think it's gonna work and he's gonna be above 125, or I think it's not gonna work and he's gonna be right around like 80 to 100. Yeah, I mean, I think it could be really bad. I forget who it was over at Fantrax, but they studied aging curves, and typically when a hitter goes the direction that JD Martinez has gone at this age, rebounds are just really few and far between. So I'm not saying he can't do it, because his profile was one when he signed that it looked pretty safe. You know, we were like, hey, this is a guy who can age well, and when he can't play in the field, he'll just be full-time DH all the time and it'll be great. But maybe he's not that, and maybe the bat speed really did start to fade.
Yeah, I think it's valid. 115 is a tough over under for me, if I'm being honest, but I can talk myself into him coming back.
I hope you're right. He's a professional.
Well, they're all professionals. That's one of those phrases I've never really understood. But anyways, number three. So the first thing the Red Sox are probably going to do this offseason is hire a new manager. I think we both agree that Renicky is not coming back, right?
Oh, thank God. I hope.
I don't even dislike Renicky. I thought that was the case before the season even started. Obviously, nothing that has happened this season would reverse that, but feelings about Renicky aside, will the new manager be somebody who has managed in the majors before?
Yes, it'll be Alex Cora.
I figured. I almost said, is it going to be Alex Cora?
So here's the thing. It's not like I hate Renicky, but Renicky was not good at this job. He was... I think the best praise you could give him is that he didn't hurt the Red Sox and that they would have been this bad anyhow, but he's just not the right guy for this job. He just didn't seem engaged, and we need a more energetic guy for this clubhouse. He was fine for this year, and, you know, I wish Renicky well and Naren and that crew, but we need the energy that a guy like Cora brings to the clubhouse, and it's a big difference, I think.
So I don't think Cora's coming back. I've been pretty steadfast on that. I think it's strange that people think it's so likely, and I'm starting to think I'm wrong about it, but I can't imagine them bringing him back. But I think if they do bring him back, Renicki is staying Zoo. I think he would stay on as bench coach. But I think they're going to get a new guy. I forget the name of the Rays bench coach. I think that would make a lot of sense given his connections with Bloom. I think they're going to find somebody who can work with Bloom really well, who kind of works on the same wavelength. And I think it's going to be a guy that is like Alex Cora, but isn't Alex Cora, and somebody who does not have experience.
Interesting. Experience as a manager.
In the majors, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I've been seeing the ridiculous Jason Veritek stuff going around again.
You don't I don't think that's impossible. A possibility.
Really? Okay. So, you're not one of those that discounts it. So, I kind of think it's a jump.
I would not bet on it, but I wouldn't, like, fall out of my chair if it happened. Mostly because I've been sitting for 29 years and I can...
I'd be surprised if Bloom went that direction. Let me just say, like, if it was Dombo, I'd be like, yeah, I see it. But I just don't see Bloom doing that.
I don't know that would make a difference. I think if Veritek... I mean, Veritek's been there all year, and Bloom's been there all year. So if maybe Veritek made an impression on him, I don't know why that would be out of the question. Like I said, I would put the chances definitely at less than 50%. I'm not expecting it to happen. I don't think he's the favorite for the job or anything. But I think he's well-respected enough that it's a possibility. The ridiculous one was Pedroia. That one was thrown out. I forget who threw that one out there. But that was the one that almost made me fall out of my chair.
I guess I should clarify. I don't think it's ridiculous that Veritek would be a manager. I think former catchers being a manager is very smart, and I think that Veritek was one of the best at his craft, so I'm sure he'd be a good manager. I just think that people, when they talk about Veritek, they talk about it like it's a shoe-in just because he played here for so long.
Oh, I agree with that.
And it just kind of like, it annoys me a little bit. But Veritek, I don't know if you saw a picture of him. He's looking slim these days. He's working out real hard, so you know, he's getting ready for that 162 grind. But let me ask you this, Matt. Who do you think is more likely, if you had to put a chance on it, Veritek as the next manager or Cora?
Oh, that's good. I think they're pretty close. I would say Veritek.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I would go Cora.
I think I might be wrong, but I don't know. I just cannot see it.
That's fair. I couldn't see it either, and now I've talked myself into it, especially... When the punishment came down, I started to think that there was a real possibility. Like, when all the excuses were made about how most of the transgressions took place in Houston, I saw the excuse being built.
Yeah, I don't really want him to come back, to be honest, and I like Alex Cora. I think he did follow me on Twitter for a little while. I don't know if he still does. So if you're listening to this, Alex, I'm sorry. But I don't really want a connection to that 2017 Astros team. I just don't.
Yeah. What about that 2018 Sox team, though?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's something that we fairly say wasn't as bad as the Astros. But, I mean, we got to acknowledge that that is a thing that happened. And so he is part of that, too. I feel like they shouldn't go down that road again.
Yeah, it's a very fair criticism of the idea of that happening.
All right, let's move on from that. Going to the next one, the Red Sox highest paid free agent this winter is a pitcher.
False. I don't think that, being that I don't believe that they know what they have in so many of their arms, that they are going to invest and another pitcher. And I know that that statement sounds antithetical, but I think they want to see what Sale looks like. They want to see whether or not Erod can come back at all. They want to see how Houck's pitch develops. And I think they will use Eovaldi and Perez. I don't think they'll try and trade those guys. I think they're going to try and piece it together with smaller veteran moves before they decide to go in on somebody who signals you're competing, like a Trevor Bauer. I don't think that they enter that type of a market, and I do think that they sign somebody in the field who is important.
So I don't even have to pretend on this one. I do disagree. I won't go too deep into it. We kind of went over this a couple weeks ago. We did. We tried to project 2021. Was that last week or 2 weeks ago? I don't know.
It was last week. It just last feels week. Like forever ago. Jeez.
So if you want to hear more about that, you can listen to last week's episode. We did talk about that. My basic stance was that they aren't really going to spend big on any one player, but they're going to spend big in total relative to the rest of the league on just a bunch of guys, and I had Marcus Stroman as their top pitcher, and I think they're going to sign somebody from like that B tier of pitchers, and I think that's going to be their biggest move.
That wouldn't be a very big signing, probably.
It would or wouldn't?
Would not.
Yeah. It would be like a mid-tier.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there's going to be a mid-tier this winter, but we shall see. Michael Chavis. Let's go back on the Michael Chavis conversation. He stays with the Red Sox through the winter and gets 400 plate appearances next year.
False to both. I think the Red Sox will find somebody interested in Chavis. You can't have that many guys that strike out that much, and therefore he does not get 400 plate appearances.
So I think... I don't think he's going to get traded. Obviously, if I took the other side, but I really don't think he's going to get traded just because... But I can obviously see it. But I think the path to 400 plate appearances is that he's building up this versatility. And if they don't sign another second baseman, I think the idea that Christian Arroyo can be this everyday second baseman is kind of wild to me. And I'm kind of up on Christian Arroyo relative than to where I was even like a week ago. But it still seems crazy to like pencil into that spot like Jerry Remy has been doing. But yeah. I think if they start with Arroyo, he falters. Chavis gets that chance. An outfielder gets hurt. He gets some plate appearances in left field. I think he kind of bounces around. I think that's probably the best path. But if I were to... be injected with some truth serum, I would probably agree that he wouldn't get to 400.
Yeah, it's just hard to see them giving that many at-bats to him this next year.
I mean, unless he starts out hot, though. I mean, we've seen Michael Chavis hot streaks, and there have been more than one. I mean, the one that right at the start of his career was obviously the big one. We had another one later in 2019. He's been a little bit hot late, just had a two home run game. So, I mean, they're exhilarating. They're very hard to ignore when he does get hot, so... If he just has one of those in like the middle of April, all of a sudden you play yourself into a nearly everyday role for 3 months and you're almost all the way there.
Hey, I'm rooting for the guy. I like his personality a lot, and I would like him to do well.
Pretty much impossible to root against, but there are obviously very real flaws.
Yeah.
Jack and Bradley Jr. is the center fielder next season.
I really want to say yes because I really like JBJ. He's one of my favorite players, but I don't think that he stays here. I think he's going to get a bigger deal with someone else, a multi-year deal, and I think he's very interested in exploring a different place to play. He's been pretty open about that, so I'll be sad to lose him, but I've had a blast watching him. He's been the most fun player to watch over the last few weeks.
So I think... like I kind of alluded to before, I don't think there's going to be a middle tier in free agency this year. So I think guys are either going to get bigger deals than we expect, or they're going to be out on the market for a long time. And I think Bradley might be on the wrong side of that coin. And he ends up on the market into late January, early February, and the Red Sox come back to him and say, just come back for a year, play at the park you know, keep hitting the ball the other way off the monster, and you'll get your big contract next year. I think that's the path to get him back. If he gets a multi-year offer, then I would agree that he's gone. I'm not super confident that it's coming. But I also have no idea what this market's going to be like. I'm just sort of pessimistic about it.
Yeah, that's fair.
The Red Sox sign at least one player to an extension that buys out free agency years.
Yes, Devers will sign an extension this year.
I don't think anybody is, and this is one that I actually believe. I don't know that teams are going to want to do that with guys that they already have control over when the CBA is so unclear. So I could see extensions being kind of extinct, but I could also see them being on fire and be like, let's get them in while we know what the rules are and then go from there. But
Well, that's the big thing, is that one of the biggest things the players want is less team control. So it's hard for me to believe that post-2022 teams have more team control.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But also, the owners have won every negotiation since, like, I was 10. So, I don't know, just because the players want something, it's going to happen.
Last year, though, or this year, I should say, did feel very different.
Yeah. Than you're not wrong. Years. You're not wrong. And I very much hope that Devers... I think Verdugo is a sneaky extension candidate that nobody's really talked about. Just seems like, especially... Obviously, there's still ill will over the Mookie Betts deal. You can be like, hey, at least we got this guy who we replaced him with and was the best player in our team, and he's locked up for 7 years or whatever. I'm just throwing a number out there.
I'd be all for that.
Yeah. Something to keep an eye on. I think it's Devers, Verdugo, Bogarts are probably the only names to watch on that front, probably off the top of my head, right?
Yeah, and I would be so happy if they locked up Bogey first. If they looked at his situation first, I'd be very happy.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'd be happy about any of them, but yeah, Bogarts, I think, is the guy, sentimentally, that I would want them to keep the most.
Yeah.
Let's see. Our favorite player, Matt Barnes, is the top reliever on the roster at the start of camp.
False. They will sign someone from this pretty good crop, actually, of relievers that's going to be available this offseason. And I think I'm sticking with my boy Blake Treinen as the guy they're going to sign.
So I worded this one very carefully because I knew you'd take this side. I think that at the start of camp he will be. I think that the way they're going to play the reliever market is they're just going to wait it out for the last guy standing. And just get these guys on a cheaper deal than they would usually take. So that could be a couple weeks after camp. I don't think Barnes will be the top reliever on opening day, but I can see them waiting a very long time to sign somebody like a Kirby Yates, who I mentioned in last week's podcast, or Treinen, or Kent Giles is a guy that I really would have liked. He's not pitching next year, so he's out of the conversation. But
Alex Colomé, what do you think about him?
Not super high on Colomé.
Had a great year this year, though.
Yeah, I will be honest, I haven't looked at his numbers, but he would definitely be the top reliever, but I would prefer somebody else, I think.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, last one. The player with the most starts at second base next season is already in the organization.
Man, this is the toughest question on this list for me. I have no idea what they're doing with second base. My gut tells me no. I think it's going to be outside the organization. I think they're going to sign a veteran. But I also think I'm probably wrong.
Oh, I know that feeling very well. All right, so full disclosure, I do agree with you. But I had a conversation with... user Scarecrow in the Over the Monster comments yesterday. Days don't mean anything to me anymore. At some point recently. And his or her case, I don't know your gender if you're listening, sorry. Their case was basically that the Red Sox will not want to spend resources to get like a top tier guy like a DJ LeMahieu. Or even like a Tommy La Stella, who, like I said last week, I think is going to get multiple years. I think I agree with that. I think they would go with a one-year guy. My name last week was Cesar Hernandez. And Scarecrow's argument on the other side was that the Red Sox would see the trio of Arroyo, Chavis, Munoz, throw CJ Chatham in there. I mean, they have a billion of these like fringe guys that play middle infield. Throw any of those guys and then Jeter Downs at some point, and combined they would probably be, you find the hot hand, they would probably be 1.5-ish war, and that's about what you're expecting from Cesar Hernandez. So I can see that viewpoint. I don't think that would be a good idea, because I feel like they've done that at this position like 3 years in a row, and it's literally never worked out. It always sounds so good in theory, and that you find somebody eventually, but usually when you're playing that game, it takes like 3 months to find somebody and you've already dug yourself in a hole. But I could see that thought process going, especially if they wanted to spend big on the pitching side.
Yeah, I agree. And that exact reasoning is why I think I'm probably wrong. This second base situation is starting to remind me a whole hell of a lot of the post-Nomar Odyssey before we got
totally the same thing. It is driving me banana pants. That's why I like Cesar Hernandez, because he is not... The upside is just not there. But man, he plays 160 games every year. He hits for like a 90 to 95 WRC plus, and he plays above average defense at second base. I would kill for that production. Just like, give me something solid.
I want Astrubel so bad.
Yeah, it's just somebody like that. I just, like I said, the idea is sound in theory that you're going to find somebody and eventually they'll stick. But it could, like I said, it could take until July when you find that hot hand, and then you've pissed away half the season.
And also, you know, I think it has to be some sort of a comfort level too, and a mental burden off of a guy like Xander Bogaerts, you know, having a different double play partner like every couple weeks too. There's definitely a level of trust that develops there, and team chemistry wise, having guys in defined roles really does pay dividends often. So I think that aspect of it is underrated in team building. Just because you can equal their war doesn't mean, you know, the rest of the team will benefit in the same way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally fair. All right, so that was that segment. We got a few questions before we finish things out. Jackson Posey asks, after reaching base at over an 83% clip at the alternate site, and that is actually a true stat, is Nick York worth more than the collective GDP of New York City?
I would guess that the collective GDP of New York City is very high, like trillions. So
1.53 trillion. I looked it up.
Oh, there we go. He is not worth that much. And also, hot take, not a hot take, New York City, such a better city than Boston. I'm very sorry that I'm saying this on this podcast, but Boston is, it's underwhelming at times. I love the Red Sox.
Insanely unnecessary shot at Boston. I don't necessarily disagree that New York City is better. I've never lived in either. I would hate to live in either city, to be honest with you. That does not sound appealing to me. But I very much like visiting Boston. I very much like visiting New York City. But that was just a wildly unnecessary shot at the city of Boston. From the top rope. This is,
you
like
know what?
This,
I hate the traffic, man. I hate it. And
driving
the city
Boston
layout is
insane. This driving, oh well, yeah, that's also true. Driving in New York City is not very fun either.
Well, let me just tell you. I mean, I lived in DC for 7 years, and I've lived in Massachusetts for the rest of my entire life, and been to Boston a billion times. And I knew DC better as a city layout after like 3 weeks of living there than I do Boston after going there a million times, because none of the streets make any sense. It's not intuitive. That's you have of, to like memorize it. I hate it.
I don't know. This is a why I did not see this question taking this turn. to answer the question though, Nick York is worth more than the collective GDP of New York City, because you cannot put a dollar amount on the worth of a human being.
Oh, Matt. That's really nice.
Let's not treat our fellow human beings as dollar figures.
We know life is cheap in this country.
Also, GDP is a bullshit stat. Vincent Frederick says, Sale, Erod, Evaldi, Hauk, Perez for 2021 rotation, or would you chase a free agent pitcher? If yes, who? I feel like that should be whom. But.
Yes, I agree with your rotation fully, Vincent. And the only thing I would do there is I will flip Perez to be the 3 and bump Eovaldi and Hauk down to the 4 and 5 spot.
It's insane not to go after a free agent pitcher. Sale is not going to be ready.
No, he won't be
ready. At least
a
couple of months. Hauk has been good for a few starts. Perez, the peripherals like, still scare me. Rodriguez, we have no idea what he's going to be able to do. The idea of not getting a new legitimate starting pitcher, either via free agency or trade, is insane to me.
It's Nick Pivetta, man. That's who's going to be in sales spot for those few months. Get used to it.
I am going to turn into the Joker next year. Also, not really a question, but I'm going to turn into one. Matt Corey replied to my call for questions with a gif of pudding. When was the last time you ate pudding?
It's been some time, and not by choice, because I really enjoy pudding.
Yeah, why don't we eat more pudding?
I don't know. There was a little while where my wife was buying like those single serving snack packs.
So puddings. Good.
It was amazing, and then it just stopped happening. But I really wish it would start again.
When I was a youngin, when I used to go to CCD, we used to do CCD every other Sunday, and it was at night. And so when I got home, my mom would always have this very basic, like, not it's she called it icebox cake. There are fancy icebox cakes. This is not a fancy icebox cake, but it was just chocolate pudding. A layer of chocolate pudding, a layer of graham cracker, a layer of vanilla pudding, and then another layer of graham cracker, and you just throw it in the fridge for like 24 hours and eat it. And man, that was like the best. We gotta eat more pudding as a society. I think we need to... I don't know who's in charge of desserts, but pudding's gotta be higher up there, man. Pudding is so good.
It is real good. What's your ranking of, you know, chocolate, vanilla, tapioca? I mean, where are you at with
tapioca? Maybe when I'm like 75, I'll go tapioca. Although there's a place that sells like smoothies with little tapioca balls on the bottom of them that are pretty good.
Mm.
Although I usually get the mango stars. But I always liked the ones that were like chocolate with the vanilla in the middle, and then I would mix it up and turn it into like that light brown.
That's the move right there.
Yeah, that was good. I think that's the takeaway from this podcast for everybody listening. We got to figure out a way to get pudding back into the mainstream. Not enough pudding in our lives.
Yeah, and I apologize ahead of time for assaulting Boston. So.
That was unforgivable. I've said many times in the past that I don't like Fenway. I feel like saying you just don't like the entire city of Boston.
I don't like the layout. I don't like the layout. I love Fenway.
All right, well, I don't think we need to have you double down on this take. I think we need to get out before you insult another giant population of people. First it was daughters, now it's the entire city of Boston.
It was not daughters. That was a mishearing, and I'm going to go have a pudding, and I'm not sharing.
Do you really have pudding? I kind of wait. Damn. All right, let's get out of here. So I am Matt. That is Jake. You can follow me at Over the Monster on Twitter. Jake is at Dev Jake. You can read our writing at overthemonster.com. Off-season stuff will be starting up in full swing, probably not next week, but the week after that. We'll have some stuff next week, but not full off-season mode until the week after that. Rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff that people say at the end of every episode. Did I miss anything?
No, that's it.
All right, let's get out of here.